You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Wednesday, 11 June. We've got U.S. inflation data out, 2:30 our time, expected 2.5% from 2.3% previously. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Ken Yana. He's with Scope Prime. Telkom results, a dividend for the first time in 4 years, debt down. Lots to like. Some T's and C's, of course, they'd sold SwiftNet, but also more broadly the telco sector. Kobus Rettenbach, he's from Premier Group. Good results, improving efficiencies in their operations. And then Kwesi Jackson from 10X Investments, taking responsibility for your own retirement. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. More than half of Discovery's medical aid plans saw declines in members last year. Four plans saw year-on-year declines in excess of 5%. Business Day, Stats SA stands by jobless data as calls for review mount. Capitec and Primer Research spark debate by suggesting employment in informal sector may be understated and maybe our unemployment rate is only 10%. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 0.6%, NASDAQ 0.2% higher. The East also green, Sydney 0.1% up, Tokyo 0.5% higher, Hong Kong 0.5% up, and Tencent 0.5%. Commodities are mixed, gold futures 3,360, Brent is down at 66.71, platinum a few dollars higher, 1,226, palladium down at 1,085. The Rand is 17.69, Bitcoin 109,800, and top 40 opening call, red open 66 points or a little less than 0.1% lower.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Ken Yanis from Scope Prime. Ken, appreciate the early morning. Telkom results, as I said in the intro there, some strong cash, debt down, first dividend after 4 years and a special dividend. A lot of this thanks to the SwiftNet sale, but actually a lot of it really has been the turnaround. It is kind of working. Your thoughts on Telkom and the results we saw yesterday?
I think if you look at results on face value, everything seems okay, and probably everything seems great because there's a cash dividend and a special dividend at that. But as you said, the sale of SwiftNet is really quite concerning. I mean, when you look at the strategy report, they're saying that they're going back to focusing on their core capabilities. But now you ask yourself the question, mobile services revenue is up almost double digits, or circa up 20%, but yet they're selling the tower business. Is that not where core capabilities should lie? But I mean, the management in their report says that they think they can operate efficiently without towers within the stable, which for me as an investor, you ask yourself, when management starts cutting off parts of the business which are very pivotal, what really happens in the future? But overall, a great result. I mean, if you're a shareholder, you've really done well if you've held Telkom for throughout this year.
You absolutely have. And I take your point. I mean, their argument is, someone else can manage the towers, but that really is handing over the core of your business to a third party who might be friendly today, but maybe not in a year or 10.
Yes, I mean, you're starting to see a lot of these piggyback networks like popping up everywhere.
Yeah.
And essentially, what they're relying on is the infrastructure of other people in order to run their network. But I'd have more safety knowing that I have some of my assets that in order to be able to essentially stabilize the business. Mm. But with that being said, it's a very high cash generative industry that needs a lot of capex, and I think Telkom has lagged for that for some time with that.
Yeah, it is the capex, and that's my point around the sector more broadly. MTN, Vodacom, Cell C may be coming to market later out of Blue Label, and what we see there, I mean, is it a sector that excites you? It's a utility essentially, but with that capex burden.
It's a utility that's actually ex growth if you see margin compression across most of these services. But I think the difference between Telkom, MTN, and Vodacom is that Vodacom and MTN have almost become a fintech place more than anything else, because there's more to that stable. There's M-Pesa, there's a Momo, and there's literally the access to Africa through Vodacom and MTN. But Blue Label is one that's really just really not really taken the eyes of investors, and it's done the best out of all the four of them this year.
It has. Blue Label's been a... There have been some folks on my Twitter stream who have been punting it, but I think by and large, Blue Label has been absolutely missed. We'll leave it there. That's Kenyon Yana, Scope Prime. Appreciate the early morning time. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio sub-managed by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Kobus Hertenbach, he is CEO of Premier Group. Results for year-end March saw revenue up 7%, HEPS up 26.8%, dividend a little over 23% higher. Kobus, very strong operational leverage in these set of results. We're seeing improving margins at the same time. Is this efficiency? Is this cost containment? Is this input costs, or perhaps a bit of everything?
It certainly is a bit of everything, but I think it's also the capital investments that we have made in improving our facilities, improving our throughputs. Where there's bottlenecks, we've made investments to improve the flow and really increase the economies of scale within our business across the board, you know, all the way through our bakeries, our malls, some of our other factories, and through the logistical supply chain and into the sales channel. So you really have to try and fight on all fronts. There's no silver bullet that you can just use to reduce your costs. And so that's really an all-hands effort.
And to the point, I mean, this isn't a new product, new facility. This is existing that you're just making more efficient, essentially.
That's effectively right, yes. I mean, we are busy with that big construction project to get Aeroton, our big bakery in the south of Johannesburg, up and running to get that same level of efficiencies into that market. But yes, across the rest of the footprint, it really was just leveraging and investing and making sure our programs of continuous improvement run well so that we can continue to drive those efficiencies.
And the efficiencies, I mean, obviously this is helping your cost on your side. Is some of that then, because you mentioned your one of your tampon manufacturing, you actually managed to pick up volumes as well as sales. I mean, do you get more volume, or is it also passing some of the cost saving on to consumers?
Well, we've certainly, in pockets within our business, has been quite successful in driving volume in the last year. In our Lelets facility in particular, we have onshored some of the manufacturing from Taiwan to South Africa, and we've also started to supply some of the product into the UK market instead of sourcing that from third-party suppliers. So we have been on this multi-year drive to significantly enhance the throughput and economies of scale of that factory. And I think we're starting to at the cusp of starting to really see the benefit of that coming through in our lower cost of production.
You also talk around essentially reformulating some of the recipes and the like that you're using. That must be a bit of a tightrope, because you don't want to offend your customer. You want to keep the product the same, but I suppose just perhaps different ingredient, different ratios, and perhaps even a better product at the end of the day, but a cost saving for you.
That's the one area we haven't really saved costs on, to be quite honest, Simon, is for us, quality is so paramount, and being able to really sustain a consistent quality and availability on time the whole time has got such greater leverage for us from a volume and margin perspective to sustain that, rather than trying to save ourselves to greatness on ingredients within our products. And so we really haven't engaged in massive re-engineering of any of our products to save money.
Your Groceries International, which is the smaller division, how's Mozambique doing? Is that sort of returning to normal? Certainly from what we're seeing as outsiders, the violence around the elections has abated. Is the market back to normal?
Well, I think, you know, before this last financial year, we thought times were tough, and then we had an election, and then it got really tough. What I do want to say is that we've got an absolutely magnificent team in country, highly engaged employees. And if it weren't for the extraordinary efforts that those guys have gone through, then we wouldn't have escaped all of the political unrest, you know, without any damage to our facilities. So we were very grateful for all their efforts. But we also, you know, we've been through the KZN riots, we've been through the KZN flooding and COVID and everything else. Yeah. And we knew that if we prime ourselves, protect our facilities, and then come out on the other side, and we the first ones that are able to start supplying into the market once the demand really comes through, as the supply chains are empty and people really need basic food to sustain themselves, you know, we'd be ready. And I think that we've benefited from that a lot since the middle of January, and suddenly have had a couple of very good trading months there. So the biggest thing that we are now dealing with is availability of foreign currency. It's taken a big hit. Not just sure whether it's the withdrawal of US aid or just the unrest or, you know, the combination of all of the factors, but we've certainly been under pressure from that perspective. And but I think we've got a good working relationship with the banks, and they certainly are prioritizing us a bit because of the nature of our business in supplying basic staple foods. So that has been a worrying factor. But as I sit here now at the moment, it's under control.
Yeah, and I take your point. Over the last 5 years, there's been pandemics, there's been the KZN riots, the Mozambique violence. And I'm going to throw one more into it, which is Eskom. These are results to end March. So pretty much for much of the period, Eskom was largely providing power. Load shedding had pretty much disappeared. Was the load shedding a significant impact? It must have hurt. I mean, you've got bakeries. You can't lose power there.
Yes, I think the first thing about power outages is just that it makes it so much harder for your operational teams on the ground.
Yeah.
And, you know, the efforts that they have to go through to try and work through and maintain production through those works for the electricity stoppages is really quite difficult. Obviously, in the bakeries, we've never had a bakery that doesn't have backup power facilities. Yeah. I mean, it's just part of the game in that industry. And so we were able to tap on that. It certainly had cost implications. We've never in the past made a big deal out of it, because we feel that if there's load shedding and everybody is incurring costs, then everybody will try and recover it in prices. And when it dissipates, mm-hmm. then everybody will compete harder on prices again. And so, you know, to isolate certain things and use that as excuses is just not the way that we run our business. But certainly, I mean, in the last year, it's been an absolutely big turnaround and much more easier to sustain your operations. I mean, we had one of our facilities, one of our sweet factories in Whiteville in Johannesburg, that where the municipal transformer completely blew up, and for 3 weeks where the factory stood, because I mean you can't run that just on backup power. And so some of those frustrations still exist, but I guess in general it's a complete and utter change over an operating environment.
Yeah, and I take your point. It was same for everyone. We were all getting load shedding to some or other degree. We'll leave it there. That's Kobus Hedbach. He is CEO Premier Group. Appreciate the time. Let your money benefit from experience with Stanlib Asset Management. Find out about Stanlib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for 3 decades.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Kwesi Jackson, Client Relationship Manager at 10X Investment. Kwesi, appreciate the time. The stark reality for South Africans is that many of us, when we get to retirement age, simply aren't going to have enough money for that retirement that we've dreamed on. We've worked our entire lives, but we just kind of haven't got it right towards the end. And we don't have that pot of cash to aid us for our, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 years of retirement.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for the time this morning, Simon. And yeah, that's the reality of, I would call it, 94% of South Africans that reach that golden age and just realize that, you know, there's nothing actually left that I can retire with. And it's the most saddest thing when you chat to someone at 65 or 60 and all they have is 100,000 rand. You know, what do you say to them? Where do you start?
Yeah, I don't know where you do start. I mean, one of the truths is that in retirement, we need less money than when we're working. I don't know, if we're earning, like, say, 40,000 or something, our tax rate could reduce. We're not saving for retirement anymore. So we need less than we needed whilst working. How much is there an ideal number for what that ratio should be?
Yeah, no, there is. So on our side, you know, we're saying that, you know, the amount should be at least about, call it 60 to 75% of your last salary. And I think, yeah, to make it a number that's palatable for most people in South Africa, that, you know, let's call it 10,000 rand, which is your salary. Mm-hmm. And so if my last salary at my company was 10,000 rand a month, if there's a provident fund or pension fund out of it, I can get at least 6,000 to 7,500 rand because my expenses have reduced. You know, I'm no longer putting money in the provident fund. You know, debt, hopefully by that point in time, you've paid off all your credit cards, all your bonds and things like that. And, you know, if there are any kids in the picture, they're no longer financially dependent on you. you know, your expenses should have reduced significantly by the time I get to retirement. So that 60 to 75% of my salary should actually then suffice.
I hadn't thought around debt. I mean, in an ideal world, you do get to retirement. Your big debt is usually your home. It's going to be your bond. But you need to get to retirement with, ideally, with no debt. I mean, maybe a little bit of credit card, but no significant debt, because that can really punch a hole.
That is definitely true. I mean, I think sometimes we see people then, you know, perhaps prioritizing paying off the debt because you then sort of planning to make sure that when I finish the house, then maybe I can focus on my retirement. Mm-hmm. But sometimes money, I don't know what happens when you're finishing off paying a car. You know, the 3,000 rand you were paying off monthly, sometimes it disappears into the budget and you actually don't know where it went, and it doesn't actually go towards saving for retirement. And so you've got this paid off house, but then you're now sitting there without an income, and yeah, I can't even pay my own rates and levies.
I suppose there's also a flip, depending on the house. I mean, you could sell it, perhaps downgrade, particularly if your kids have left home, and that could also bring you a bit of cash. It really, more than anything, I mean, it is around, in a note you wrote, it's around taking that ownership. It's around reevaluating, particularly, you know, I worked for a corporate before. Every month they take some money off your salary and you kind of think, well, that's it, I'm sorted. The answer is, well, maybe, but maybe not.
Yeah, no, I think the one thing that I hope that the article I wrote was going to do is I think give the workers their voice back. Mm-hmm. You know, I think these provident funds and pension funds are managed by executives, and I don't think executives have an incentive to actually make sure that it is running for the benefit of the lowly paid staff. Mm-hmm. You know, we're no longer doing annual reviews. You know, we just take the provident fund with one provider, you know, or 20 years ago, and we never actually come back and check, is it still working for the benefit of our staff? And I think I'm seeing staff as well just outsourcing that responsibility to the company and sort of just resting in the comfort that, tick, I've got the provident fund, but that's not enough. You need to do your part as well. You need to involve as well. I was at a wellness day yesterday and talking to people that have been with our fund for the past 6-7 years. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time that they were logging in and checking their balance. And that is just, you know, crazy because, you know, when I talk to them, the people at retirement, this is the first time you're seeing your 100,000. When you ask why is it so little, you know, compared to what, because you've never checked for the past 20, 30 years that you've been working. And so I'm calling on staff members, I'm calling on employees from the factory, every level of management to say, take responsibility. We can't just leave it to the company to say, we've got the fund. We need to be asking, you know, what fees are we paying? Are we being overcharged? Is that why people, when they retire from this company, are not retiring with enough money?
Yeah, and run the numbers. And you don't need to be rocket scientist. I mean, you can get a retirement calculator. There'll be one on the 10X website, and go and have a look and see, you know, for my age and what I have, am I on track? And if not, make some phone calls, make some plans.
No, definitely. Those retirement plans, I think in our provident fund at 10X, we create a personalized retirement plan for each individual. Mm-hmm. So when you log on to the portal to check your balance, you can see, am I on track for myself? Is there an additional voluntary contribution, you know, that I can do as well? And yeah, again, this is over-reliance that the company makes a contribution. But I've seen contribution rates as little as 5%. Now, no matter how young you are, at 5% of your salary, you're never going to retire with enough money. So you need to do something as well to make sure you retire with enough money.
The magic number, 10, 15%, I imagine.
Yeah, 15% over 40 years. That should give you a good retirement over 30 years, you know, assuming a return of 5%.
Yeah, after fees. And fees hugely important. Yeah. The other one, of course, is dipping into your... And in the olden days, you would quit a job and access it. Now we've got the two-pot, which is...
Two-pot, yes.
The two-pot, in one sense, is great. If you have a proper emergency, maybe a medical emergency, but it's really not there for, I don't know, holidays or stuff, because that is your future retirement that you are spending today.
Yeah, no, most definitely. I think when we go back to that example of, you know, I'm trying to replace at least 60% of my salary by the time I get to retirement. In this new two-pot era, if every year I'm treating my savings pot as a bank account, I'm simply just putting money in and withdrawing, you know, then instead of ending up with 6,000 rand, I'm now only ending up with 4,000 rand. And I think one of the things that we're seeing in 10X, and I think it's not just 10X, it's the industry as a whole as well, is that the individuals that are withdrawing in this new tax year, 80% of them also withdrew in the last, you know, 80% plus also withdrew in the past tax year. So the encouragement is to please do not use the savings pot as an emergency fund, you know, for things that you can put up an extra emergency fund for example, in a unit trust or just savings account with your bank.
Yeah, I suppose that's the key lesson there is have an emergency fund that's outside of your retirement. We'll leave it there. Kwezi Jackson, Client Relation Manager, 10X Investments. Appreciate the time. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Are you on top of your retirement? Do you have an understanding of how it's doing? Are you putting enough aside? Perhaps you're just planning to work until you die. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. That's it for today. I was chatting with Carmen Mepelwane yesterday about Omnia results. Strong mining, decent agri, poor chemicals, and SARS. We asked if you were holding this industrial group. Almost half said yes, great potential. The rest split between no, it's a boring business, and saying first they need to resolve that SARS issue. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobukle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Structured products, China and gold.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.